Hello, I'm Kelly Klinger. I am a former extra on the Mickey Mouse Club and was once a background singer for Britney Spears. I am a daughter, a sister, a wife, and a mother. I am a songwriter, a friend, a blogger, and a Christian. I am also a post-abortive woman who has lived with paralyzing self-hatred and suffocating guilt because of my choices. After finding healing in the arms of a loving God, I also found a resounding voice inside of me to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the unborn babies who are no longer safe inside the womb, and for the millions of women who are feeling the destruction and pain that abortion leaves in its path. Please join me for the Colorado March for Life on January 21st at 12 o'clock noon at the Colorado State Capitol as I honor my children in heaven and all of the lives that have been stolen by the abortion industry. Help us continue our fight to end abortion now and promote personhood in Colorado by adding your voice to mine. I hope to see you there.
Warning, warning, there's truth overhead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Did you know there were butter in Scotland that's rock hard? It's turned to a fossil butter just in centuries, not in thousands or millions of years. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I am Bob Enyar, and if you haven't seen our Real Science Friday logo yet, brand new logo, you want to go online to kgov.com, or just Google Real Science Friday. Or go to realsciencefriday.com, however you want to get there. And there's a listing of over 100 such programs. A lot of fun. And, yeah, it turns out that in Ireland and in Scotland, it was popular to bury butter. They buried kegs of butter in the sludge and in a bog. And it's not sure if they did it primarily to preserve the butter or if they thought it was a way of, like, you get smoked ham or affecting the flavor. But every once in a while, and you could go to museums like the Cork Butter Museum in Ireland, and every once in a while they will dig up this bog butter, entire boxes of bog butter, and it has been fossilized. It's turned to stone, and that didn't happen over a period of eons, but it happened over a period of hundreds of years, for example. Not millions, not thousands, just hundreds of years. Also, Fred Williams is co-hosting on most every Real Science Friday show we do in the modern era. And Fred, we announced about a week ago that his parents, their home was destroyed by a tornado while they were in the home. And we're so thankful that they are fine. And a neighbor insisted, a neighbor has, you know, a summer home, winter home, insisted that they live in his home. He gave them the keys and said, I will not take no for an answer. This is your home until you're ready to move back into your own home. They got to rebuild it. The roof was gone. It was ripped off from over their heads. The chimney, stone chimney, fell down into the house. The kitchen had a truss of a roof crashed down into the kitchen. The house was demolished, and they survived. Wow. So Fred was down there, but he's back, and he's still catching up on his life. So hopefully Fred and I will be back on the show next week. And then the March for Life all over the country. If you need to find your closest March for Life, or if you want to take a bus to Washington, D.C., just go to marchforlifefinder.com. It's a great new website. Finally, after 35 years. Well, the internet hasn't been around popularly for 35 years. But finally, there's one site that lists every March for Life in the country, every local event, every bus stop to get on a bus and go to the March for Life in D.C. So check it out, marchforlifefinder.com. And now the atheist we had on the show yesterday, Stax Rosh, we continued our discussion and we continued recording, and so we will air another program with that follow-up conversation on January 27th. So January 27th, feel free to mark that on your calendar. Or if you subscribe to the Bob and Yurt Live podcast, just go to our website, kgovkgov.com. If you get the podcast, you'll just get it. Once a day, folks all over the country and around the world get a copy over the internet of our latest show. And so that'll be coming up. And that was an interesting conversation. Stax brought up the origin of language, and he thought that would go well for him. That was the first accusation against the Bible's credibility that he chose to raise. And I don't think it went very well. There's a short summary of that conversation on KGov, KGOV.com. Just look at the show from 2 days ago, Atheist Stax Rosh on BEL, and there's a description of the origin of language. Now, Fred Williams and I were going through the current Creation magazine, and there are a couple things I'd like to talk about, even though Fred's not here. I feel like it's a little unfair. But I'd like to talk about Stephen Hawking and his idea that the laws of physics brought the universe into existence. And then also the newest findings on the splicing of our DNA to form proteins. And then there's an editorial in here. Fred and I usually don't address the editorials, but the editor, Don Batten, has a great editorial on nothing created everything. That's pretty much the atheistic worldview. Nothing created everything. And so we should be able to get to that also. Now, do laws cause actions or do they explain actions? Which is it? Did the physical laws cause the universe? Now, for example, Newton's laws, Isaac Newton, his basic laws of physics, Newtonian physics, they don't cause billiard balls to move around on a pool table. The laws of physics don't cause billiard balls to move on a pool table, but they do explain how they move when they are caused to move by some agent. So when Stephen Hawking flippantly says, well, the universe was created by the laws of physics, that's a confusion of kinds. He's confusing kinds. There's a kind of thing that describes what happens. And then there's another kind of thing that causes things to happen. And the laws, they describe what happens. The laws of physics don't cause billiard balls to move around on a pool table. The laws, in and of themselves, they're not actually physical entities. You can't store them in bottles in an inventory at a drugstore. You can't take the laws of physics and boil them over a Bunsen burner. You can't do that. So the laws of physics, they describe actions, but they don't cause actions. And so there's a little blurb on page 11 of the current Creation magazine, which I highly recommend, creation.com, Creation magazine. Just go to our website, kgov.com, and we'll link you to the Creation magazine. It's just tremendous. Okay, also we have, in this magazine on page 9 of Creation, the current edition, the winter edition, 2011, there's an article about splicing code. And if you're familiar with the concept of DNA, within every cell in our body, there's DNA. It's a complex molecule, the most sophisticated, complex, intricate organization of information anywhere in the known universe. And some people say, well, that's our brain, the human brain. Well, that's a good point, except that every cell in our body contains all the information you need to build the human brain. So each cell is as sophisticated and more so than the human brain, because the cell has the information to build the brain and the liver and the kidneys and your fingernails, your fingerprints, and the whole bit, the whole ball of wax. So your DNA is basically a set of instructions within every cell in your body, plus every animal, every fish, every insect, every plant, made up of millions or billions of cells, and they all have this instruction code within them how to build a whatever you're trying to build, like a monarch butterfly. If it's a sponge, how to build a sponge. Now, you know how atheists, they think it's uncanny. They think that we're 99.97% the same as chimps. One public school student told us about a week ago that we are 99.97% the same as chimps. And one of our family members said to him, "Can't you just look at human beings and chimps and see that we're more different than that?" No. And of course, the percentage even claimed by atheists has been getting lower and lower and lower. But now they say that they've determined that sponges are 70% human sponges. So what's actually being learned is that the blueprint for living organisms has a set of tools, and those tools are used to build all different kinds of living creatures. And so that's why we see a degree of similarity, because there are similar building blocks, similar proteins, and in our DNA, similar stretches of instructions to build a protein. So does that mean if you look at a sponge and you look at, say, Stephen Hawking, maybe that's a bad example. You look at a sponge, you look at Barack Obama, maybe that's a bad example. You look at a sponge and you look at a microbiologist and you say, are these 70% the same? And you'd have to be sort of silly to think that a sponge is 70% of a human, almost human, like most of the way there. That's silly. When you look at a chimp, and if you can't intuitively recognize that a chimp is more than 1% or 2% different than a human, boy, are you naive. How many chimps design suspension bridges or MRI machines? Or sit around debating the philosophy of absolute morality? I mean, they don't do these things. They're good at swinging through trees and getting food and reproducing. So, but anyway, it turns out that in every cell, we have a set of instructions for how to build the organism, like a human being, and how to build proteins. Now, a lot of people hear protein, all they think about is meat or eggs. A protein is a machine. It's a biological machine. If you see one, it looks pretty wild. It looks like it has a bunch of parts. It has a certain shape to it, and that shape will enable it to do something. For example, I'll give you an example of a transport mechanism. A biological machine that could grab onto something that needs to be moved, like a big sack of supplies, and then grab on almost like with two hands to a rail, like a railroad track, and pull itself along the railroad track while it's holding on to the sack. So it brings the sack, maybe the equivalent, if you were to bring those things up to our size, it brings the sack maybe 8 miles away and delivers it where it's needed. So that would be one transport protein, one machine. And there are thousands of different kinds of machines that go about doing the work of keeping our cells alive and functioning so that our bodies can do all the things they do. So proteins are pretty sophisticated. And the typical protein might be made up of 100 pieces or so. And those 100 pieces are defined by steps of information in the DNA. And so you have DNA, the instructions for building proteins and building your whole body. You have that DNA. And then that DNA has to build proteins, machines, so your cells can survive. Now, how many kinds of proteins are there? Well, there are over 100,000 distinct proteins in a human being that we're aware of, over 100,000. But there are only about 20,000 parts of our human genome that are used to create those 100,000 proteins. So how is it that you get 100,000 proteins when there's only about 20,000 sections on our DNA that create a protein? Well, this is how. Splicing is going on. And scientists, microbiologists, have known for a long time that there's splicing going on. But now what is new is that they're beginning to identify how the splicing is going on. And there are little, we could call them a preface, like a suffix and a preface. They call them motifs. And there are short little motifs, many of them, and they might be an average of 7 letters long. And one of those prefaces gets attached to the instructions to build a protein. And when you attach it, you build a different kind of machine, a different kind. And it turns out that there are more than a dozen different kinds of motifs or prefaces that can be associated with each piece of DNA to be spliced. And the sophistication is far beyond anything human engineers, human architects, human designers have been able to accomplish themselves. And I worked at Microsoft for a while. Please don't hold that against me. I was a computer systems analyst for the phone company before I started writing for PC Week as a senior technical analyst. I was in the simulation department for McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company on the Apache attack helicopter, the AH-64. Eventually, Microsoft hired me. I had a fun, interesting computer career before I got into full-time pro-life work and broadcasting. And so I have some idea. I've taken, some college-level, upper-level courses on computer science and artificial intelligence. And I've got some idea of what goes into the planning and design and architecture of sophisticated, complex, interacting systems, hardware and software. And that's very much what's going on in every cell in the human body and every other living organism on Earth. And so one of the arguments, in fact, it was made on this show back in the 1990s by a leading anti-creationist. Her name is Dr. Eugenie Scott, and she's full-time trying to debunk creation, and she doesn't believe in freedom of ideas and expression. She wants to use government force to shut down education on evidence for intelligent design, for example, to shut it down so that it would not be allowed. And so that it would not be allowed to be published in scientific journals. If there were an effort to find evidence for intelligent design in the genetics of a cell, she would try to stop the funding, not allow the scientists to publish, not allow any of their research to be mentioned in any government schooling environment, and so on. That's the beautiful people who believe in tolerance, free speech, and diversity. And so Eugenie Scott argued on my show. I asked her for about an hour. I kept asking her for evidence, for three pieces of evidence, that any higher level function evolved, like eyesight or hearing or mobility or whatever. And after nearly an hour, she finally volunteered her one argument, her one piece of evidence, and that was junk DNA. And so now, fast forward, going on 15 years later, and headline after headline after headline is saying, well, we studied this piece of junk DNA, and it turns out it has an important function. Or we studied this disease, and we found out that this is a genetic disease, and you get it if this part of your DNA has a mutation, if it's corrupt, and that part was believed to be junk, and now we realize that junk isn't junk, because if it's messed up, you might die. Well, that means it's not junk. It has a function. And Eugenie Scott said, well, the best evidence for evolution is junk DNA. And now it turns out, over and over and over and over from the atheistic evolutionary community, that the junk is not junk. They haven't studied all the junk. There's a lot of it. It'll take decades. But so it turns out when they find that these motifs, this little preface that you put, you attach it to another piece of DNA instruction that would normally build a protein, and now you attach this part, you splice them together, and it builds a different kind of machine. And then you take the same chunk that you're going to splice and you attach it to a different motif, and it builds a different kind of machine, and then a different kind of machine. If you've ever been involved with manufacturing or design or engineering, you have an idea of how complicated that would be. It'd be similar to taking a newspaper article, a short newspaper article you've written, and just attach different sentences to it, and it's a totally different article about a different topic, and it has to be accurate. It's complicated. So they're finding out, let's say that to describe how to build a protein is 200 rungs on the ladder of information on a DNA molecule. A DNA molecule is made up of amino acids. If you've ever seen a picture of it, it's like a ladder that's twisted into a spiral, only it goes on forever. Not forever, but every rung, if you count every rung on the ladder, there's 3 billion of them in the human genome. 3 billion. So let's say you have 200 rungs on that ladder, and those 200 rungs include the information to build a protein. And so there's a transcription process. You copy that and you begin to assemble amino acids and you fold the protein. There's billions, billions, billions and billions of ways you can fold a protein, and it has to be folded correctly. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And you get, what do you call it? A protein that's not folded correctly. Maybe I'll pull that word out of my memory. But you got proteins that are broken. When a protein is broken, then you have other machinery that comes around and recycles the junk. It recycles it. So this protein is not working, and it disassembles it and recycles the parts. And so what they found out now is the motifs, or the preface that you use to splice onto a protein, sometimes it's 300 letters away on the DNA molecule. It's not right next to it attached. It's up to 300 letters away in the genetic language. And so that means with this latest discovery in the last year, that means that now even more of the junk is not junk. So even more of the DNA is being recognized as having vital life functions. So our phone number here, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-836-9278. So this idea that nothing created everything. generally, the Big Bang, if when you were in grade school and you first were taught that the Big Bang created everything, you probably read something that said, at the beginning of the universe, all the matter of the universe was compressed into a dot smaller than the period at the end of the sentence. Did you ever hear that? Did you ever hear that? That everything in the universe was so squeezed and dense and tight, it was in a space smaller than a sphere that would be the diameter of a period at the end of a sentence. Tiny. And so now think about that. Think of how much matter is in the sun. And I realize that atoms are mostly empty space. If you blew up an atom to the size of a football field, the nucleus of the atom would be tiny. It might be the size of a seed or something in the football field. Tiny. So an atom is pretty tiny. But Don Batten does a great job of laying out the grand theory of evolution, that basically nothing exploded and produced the whole universe and hydrogen and water and the earth and life and the first living cell and eventually microbiologists. And that's it. And so hydrogen is a gas which, if left long enough, turns into people. That's the atheistic evolutionary Big Bang worldview. Hey, have you gotten our Intelligent Design Collection 3 DVDs for only $49.99? What a great set. And all our science resources at KGov, KGOV.com. May God bless you.